It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. One of every four deaths in the United States is caused by cancer. That makes it the second leading cause of death in the country. Some 1.6 million Americans will be diagnosed with cancer this year. And it's expected that number of new cancer cases will increase dramatically, mostly due to our aging population in the years to come. However, there is a bright side to this story. Over the past several decades, people diagnosed with cancer are living longer and better than ever before, and more are being cured, largely due to our nation's investment in cancer research. Scientific breakthroughs in cancer occurring at a breathtaking pace with new drugs, new devices. This hour, we want to ask, how are we doing in the fight against cancer? And what, if anything, may be putting our continued advances against cancer at risk? We'd like to have you join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. My first guest is Dr. George Wiener. He will be with us the entire hour, research oncologist at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, where he is director of the Holden Comprehensive Cancer Center. He's also a professor of internal medicine at the University of Iowa, and currently, as a matter of fact, just a few days ago, became president of the Association of American Cancer Institutes. Dr. George Wiener, welcome to our studio.
Glad to be here.
And congratulations on your new term there with the Association of American Cancer Institutes. It's a two-year term. Start off by telling us what that is all about, that institute. What will you be doing in that position?
Well, the organization, the AACI, is composed of the 92 leading cancer research institutes across the United States. And the main purpose of the organization is to get the leaders and the researchers together so that we're all working against cancer in sync, that we're collaborating, that we're learning from each other, so we can move the advances in the fight against cancer forward as quickly as possible.
I'd like to have you comment on funding in just a moment, but give us some perspective on how we are doing in the fight against cancer from the last few decades up to the point, in a nutshell, of course.
Well, it's an incredibly exciting time in the field of cancer research. We're figuring out at the molecular level what causes cancer. Previously, therapies very often were tested randomly just to see what worked. And very often, the only therapies that worked were those that killed cells, and those had all the side effects we're all familiar with. As we dissect the molecular cause of cancer, we're beginning to be able to identify treatments that go directly to the cause, that are more effective and have fewer side effects than the traditional chemotherapy. So that's the good news. The challenging news is that we're learning that cancer is much more complicated than we ever thought, and that two cancers that look identical under the microscope that we used to treat the same, we now know are very different and will need different treatments. So we're learning more, we're developing new treatments, but we're also learning it's incredibly complicated. There will never be one cure for cancer. Hopefully, there'll be hundreds of cures for cancer, depending upon the specific cancer we're talking about.
Give us an idea, and I know there are probably several hundred clinical trials going on at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. You are coordinating those. What's going on at the University of Iowa in terms of cancer research, the length and breadth of it?
Well, the cancer research at the University of Iowa goes everywhere from the research laboratory through clinical trials to the population. So in the laboratory, we're continuing to explore the very nature of the cancer cell and cancer genes and why they behave abnormally, and also how they interact with the rest of the body, which we're learning is very important. A very exciting area in cancer research now is cancer immunotherapy, using the immune system to fight cancer. And so we're exploring that at a very detailed level. We also support extensive work in clinical trials. We have over 200 open clinical trials going on at any one time. Many of those are in collaboration with other cancer centers around the country. Some of those are just being done at our cancer center. Some are being done in collaboration with pharmaceutical companies or biotech companies that have a promising new drug. And then finally, we're working out in the community. It's wonderful to make cancer advances, but if they don't get out to the state of Iowa and help people, they're not doing what they're supposed to
do. In what way getting out to the community?
Well, an example would be colorectal cancer screening. We know that if people follow their doctor's advice and get screened for colorectal cancer and polyps are found early, that the risk of colorectal cancer goes down. we know that less than half of Iowans are actually getting screened appropriately. So we're doing research to try to figure out how can we enhance and encourage people to get screened so that their chance of getting colorectal cancer will go down. And if they have a cancer, it'll be detected early. So that's a different type of cancer research, but it's incredibly valuable.
Let's talk a little, have you comment about funding for research. What are the trends you're seeing? We're seeing that our advances over the past decades are largely due to our nation's investment in cancer research. What are we seeing lately?
Well, unfortunately, what we're seeing is not very promising right now. Cancer research funding has been flat in real dollars for many years. And if you actually look at the rate of inflation that we have to pay to do research, we're actually now doing about 20 to 25% less research than we were just a decade ago because of the flat funding. What this means is that when my colleagues and I put in a research grant to the National Cancer Institute and it's reviewed by peers who think it's worthy of funding, only 13% of those grants are now getting funded. So there are many excellent ideas that are not being pursued because the funding has not kept up with inflation.
Are you saying potential breakthroughs against cancer are being bypassed or delayed?
I would say that's correct. There are many more ideas, good ideas, promising ideas, than we have funds to support them right now.
Okay. Due to budget restrictions, or can you be more specific about what you know about why the funding is being cut?
Well, most of it is—
Or flat, I should say.
Yeah, most of it relates to the budget process in Congress. Cancer research is bipartisan. Everybody's in favor of it. However, some of those on the left feel that we should enhance funding for cancer research by taking money out of defense. Those on the right say we should increase funding for cancer research by taking out of entitlements, and they can't come to an agreement, so nothing happens.
So you're saying gridlock reaches right into cancer research?
It does.
Interesting. Our guest this hour, Dr. George Wiener, research oncologist and director of the Holden Comprehensive Cancer Center at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, asking this hour how we're doing in the fight against cancer and the latest challenges there, more specifically in terms of funding and the politics of funding cancer research. If you'd like to join our conversation, are you or a loved one battling cancer? What's your view on the fight against cancer in terms of research, prevention, awareness? Share your story, 1-866-780-9100, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org is our email. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. We're also on Facebook. I'd like to introduce also to our program, Jen Schulte is with us. Jen is the Iowa Government Relations Director at the American Cancer Society in our Des Moines studio. Hello, Jen.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Now, I understand the American Cancer Society puts out an annual report on the progress of every state on key cancer issues. It's called How Do You Measure Up? And anyone can access this online, the annual progress report. Tell us, how does Iowa measure up in the latest report?
You know, Iowa isn't doing so well, especially on funding areas, as George alluded to. We do have greens in three areas, and one is our comprehensive statewide smoking ban, which has the caveat of the casino exemption, something we try to work on closing that loophole so all Iowans are in a smoke-free workplace. We also are receiving green on our Iowa Health and Wellness Plan. Luckily, last year, the legislature came together and looked at expanding access to health care under the Affordable Care Act. So we did receive a green in that area. And then we received a green in our pain policy. We had a grade A pain policy. So those were the three areas that we did receive green marks. Red again was funding issues such as the breast and cervical cancer early detection program, our tobacco prevention funding. We had a couple policy areas where we were red as far as restricting tanning use to minors and making sure they're not being exposed early. And then also we haven't increased the tobacco tax or the cigarette tax in over 6 years. So we also received a red mark in that.
Where's the funding coming from or not coming from in this case that where we're getting reds there? Is that a federal issue? Is that a state issue?
Well, we in both the breast and cervical cancer and the tobacco prevention funding. We receive state dollars as well as federal dollars. Our report specifically looks at the state dollars. And so for tobacco, we're receiving $5.3 million a year, which is only about 17.1% of the CDC level recommended suggestion for Iowa on how to effectively reduce tobacco rates.
Dr. Wiener wants to jump in here on this point. Doctor?
Well, I just would like to highlight Jen's discussion about tobacco. We know that approximately one in three cancer deaths is due to tobacco. So we know how to prevent these cancers. So the fact that we're spending less than $6 million a year on tobacco cessation as a state, to me, is actually shameful. Mm-hmm. That we know these programs work. We know that when people stop smoking, their risk of developing lung cancer starts dropping almost immediately. So this is something we really should do better.
How much progress can we still make in tobacco prevention? It seems we've had a drop off, and in certain demographics, it's sort of plateaued, hasn't it? How much further can we go? We have, what, a quarter or a fifth of our population still smoking?
Well, some states have gone much lower than we have. And so one of the major programs that has shown to be effective is youth programs. And Jen can probably speak about those better than I can. Mm-hmm. But programs geared towards people before they start smoking are incredibly effective. And we've actually cut back on those programs over recent years.
Speak to that, Jen Schulte, as far as the types of programs that work for tobacco cessation or prevention.
Well, I think we have seen that there's kind of a three-legged stool approach. If we increase the tobacco tax, if we offer a statewide comprehensive smoking ban, and then if we have a comprehensive tobacco prevention and cessation program, if we fund it at the CDC level recommended values, we're going to have the highest chance of having low smoking rates. For example, if we increase just 10% of the retail price, we see a reduction of 6.5% in youth rates. So while we increase tobacco tax and we make that less affordable for kids, we see an automatic positive benefit by youth rates decreasing.
When our legislature comes back into session in January, what specifically would be the, in your views, the best step forward to get us in away from these reds and more into greens? What's the low-hanging fruit you see there, Jen Schulte? Is it the tobacco tax?
No, I don't think that we're ready to take on a tobacco tax issue, but we want to continue to look at the tobacco prevention cessation funding programs, get out. Those programs are statewide, so they affect everyone across Iowa. We really want to invest in cessation efforts. I know our quit line right now, Iowans can access free therapies for 8 weeks. That was a great step last year at the legislature, increasing the money that Iowa spends on cessation and helping people quit. But we do need to look at the preventative efforts that Iowa is investing in their states, and we really need to start helping our youth not start, because once they start, it's hard to stop.
Dr. Wiener, what would you like to see the legislature do in the coming session?
Well, what I would like to see and what I think is practical are different things. I would love to see an increase in the tobacco tax. As Jen mentioned, that is clearly demonstrated to decrease the consumption of tobacco. Mm-hmm. I would love to see the state do what other states have done and actually put some funding into cancer research. Iowa, as a state, does not have a very robust cancer research program. Most of our funding comes from national sources, from grateful patients and donors. And I would love to see more funding come from the state.
Also joining us, along with Dr. George Wiener and Jen Schulte, is Lynette Ritchie joining us by phone. Hello, Lynette. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you. Hello.
Hi, Lynette. You work as an advocate for research with the American Cancer Society. You are a cancer survivor. Tell us briefly about the cancer you've had.
I've had breast cancer. My original diagnosis was 2003. I've had a reoccurrence in 2005 and, not to sound like a broken record, but 2009 and 2011.
Mm-hmm. We hope you're doing well now, are you?
I'm still on a chemotherapy now. again, this I'm very passionate about research because the drug that I'm on now is called Kadcyla, and it was approved, I believe, February of 2014.
You were involved in a clinical trial. Was that the drug that was in that trial?
It was not, no.
Okay. You were involved in a clinical trial. What was that?
That, I don't know the specific name of the clinical trial, but I was in a clinical trial in 2011, and it was regarding oral chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm. When you were faced with that option of being in a clinical trial, what did you weigh in your mind?
I weighed in my mind the hopefulness of the clinical trial in that hopefully I won't have to do chemotherapy or anything else. I was hoping for that cure.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Wiener, tell us about clinical trials for those perhaps a bit unfamiliar. This is a large part of cancer research. You mentioned in excess of 200 clinical trials currently going on at the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics. Often a clinical trial is the last hope for a cancer patient?
Yes, but there are different types of clinical trials. There are some clinical trials where we have two treatments that we know can both be effective and we don't know which one is better. And we'll do a comparison of the two treatments, maybe in someone newly diagnosed with cancer, to see which is better. In other cases, we'll test new treatments, such as the one that Lynette was treated with, to really try to get an understanding of how well it works and whether it has side effects. A very important and vital aspect of doing clinical research is that we always put the patient's welfare first. And the patients always know what they're getting into and have given consent.
Mm-hmm. It's very very transparent.
Totally transparent. And the amount of effort that, as a cancer center, we put into making sure the trials we open are scientifically rigorous, they're ethically designed, the patients provide informed consent, we monitor safety, all with the goal of both giving the best possible care to every patient while also learning so that patients in the future can benefit.
Lynette Ritchie, how did you find the process in that clinical trial? Were you satisfied that it was transparent and you were aware of everything that you wanted to know?
Yes, I was. I was pretty transparent in the fact of the clinical trial. And as a patient, you also have to be your own advocate and ask about, is there a clinical trial available? Because there are some instances where there's clinical trials out there, but you have to maybe travel to Mayo or University of Iowa to participate in the clinical
trial. So you had to be proactive to find out about the clinical trials?
You have to ask about it, yes.
Okay.
If there's one in your area.
Dr. Wiener?
Well, this is actually a very important point. One of the things that we would like to do as a cancer community is create a better clearinghouse of information so patients can look and figure out what clinical trials they might be available for are open in their community or if they're willing to travel elsewhere.
How do people do that presently?
Well, it's quite frankly, a very clunky system. The National Cancer Institute does have a website called clinicaltrials.gov, but it's not terribly user-friendly. And one of the things, quite frankly, that's been hurt by the budget funding is our ability to develop a better system to get that information out to patients so they can actually find a clinical trial that might be appropriate for them.
Mm-hmm. Join our conversation. We're talking about advances in cancer research and also the state of funding. Dr. George Wiener, a research oncologist and director of the Holden Comprehensive Cancer Center with us, along with Jen Schulte of the American Cancer Society and Lynette Ritchie, a breast cancer survivor. 1-866-780-9100. We're coming up on a break, but let's squeeze in Jason, who is calling from Ames. Jason, what is your take on our topic today? Are you a cancer survivor?
Well, you're not a cancer survivor until you've died of something else. I mean, that's just the way it is anymore. You never get that last cell out, it seems like. I have polyendocrine cancer, and I'm being treated in Des Moines and at Iowa. And I guess, Dr. Wiener, my question for you would be, are you going to have any desire to drive the research in the institutes towards quality of life rather than extension of life? I mean, there's kind of this bargain that you're asked to make as a patient that, okay, we're going to take some of the good out of your good years to tack a few more years onto the end when it's not as much fun to be around.
Excellent. Jason, thank you, and Ames.
No, that is an excellent question. And the fact is, yes, we are doing research into quality of life. That very often one of the important determinants, if we're comparing two treatments, for example, is which one is better tolerated. And if we have a treatment that maybe extends life by a few weeks but causes all sorts of side effects, we're not going to use that.
These can be very difficult things to weigh, I can imagine. You want it to be very effective but at the same time tolerated. So how do you weigh those things?
Well, it can be difficult. We also work to develop medicines that actually reduce the side effects. One of the primary cancer treatments for testicular cancer is a medicine called cisplatinum that really made a huge difference and has allowed us to cure testicular cancer patients. When it first came out, it caused so much nausea that we actually had to anesthetize patients in order to take it. Research led to development of medications that markedly reduce the nausea in cancer patients. And there are now fantastic medicines that make nausea much less of a problem than we used to have. So that's, I think, one very notable area where cancer research geared specifically towards quality of life was very successful.
Oh, Ray, may I, if you're still there, Ray, may I ask if you were involved in any clinical trials? No, Ray is no longer with us. Anyway, clinical trials, a clearinghouse for those would be a good step forward. Also, in other regards to clinical trials, what would you say can be improved?
Well, the whole process of clinical trials is very time consuming. In order to make sure we do them scientifically correctly and ethically, we have a huge number of committees that we have to go through, and that can result in the delay in opening trials. One of the things we're doing now is learning a lesson from manufacturing and actually doing Kaizen events in our clinical trials office to try to make the process as efficient as possible so we can get those trials open as quickly as possible to get them available for patients. Okay. So we want to do it scientifically right, ethically right, but as quickly as possible.
This hour, we're asking the question how we're doing in the fight against cancer. Dr. George Wiener is with us, research oncologist and director of the Holden Comprehensive Cancer Center at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. We're welcoming your questions this hour. We also have Jen Schulte with us of the American Cancer Society and Lynette Ritchie, a breast cancer survivor, with their views. Are you or a loved one battling cancer? What's your view on the fight against cancer in terms of what we've been talking about, research, prevention, awareness? 1-866-780-9100. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Back with more on cancer research. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're back asking this hour, how are we doing in the fight against cancer? And what could be some challenges that we're facing right now? We found in the first half hour, funding has been a challenge. It hasn't been increasing to the level that our guests feel that it should be. Dr. George Wiener is with us, research oncologist, director of the Holden Comprehensive Cancer Center at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. And in his position, he coordinates all of the cancer-related research happening at the University of Iowa. Also currently and recently became president in a 2-year term of the Association of American Cancer Institutes. Also, Jen Schulte with us, Iowa Government Relations Director at the American Cancer Society, and cancer survivor Lynette Ritchie. Join our conversation. We were talking in the break, Dr. Wiener, that it would be hard to find a family that did not have a loved one touched by cancer at this day and age, would it?
Yes, it would. I mean, I lost my own mother to cancer when I was 17. My father died of cancer about 8 years ago. I have an uncle who has had 2 different primary cancers. Everybody has a story like this. It's a very, very common disease, and it is more frequent as we get older. Mm-hmm. And so it's unfortunately, it's not going away.
Right. And as our population as a whole ages, we're expecting more and more cancers in the future. And you said in the first half hour, there is not a cure for cancer. We're finding many cures for cancer. So when we were school kids, thinking about the cure for cancer, that was putting it the wrong way.
That was putting it the wrong way. And another factor that actually relates to the comment that Jason made earlier is that, in fact, for many cancers, we can't cure them yet, but we can control them quite well. And people can live with cancer and have a very high quality of life for many years. So for some cancers, it's best perhaps not to go full bore for an attempted cure when that's unlikely, but really manage the cancer for a long period of time and allow people to get on with their lives.
Jen Schulte, I wanted to circle back to something you mentioned earlier in the first half hour. We talked a little bit about tobacco prevention and what would be desirable there in terms of trying to get fewer people to start and more people to stop using tobacco. You mentioned tanning. Go into that a little bit more. I understand that at present Iowa has no restriction on minors using tanning devices. What would you like to see there?
Yeah, so Iowa is one of eight states who has absolutely no restrictions on tanning. So with the Surgeon General having the call to action on tanning the few months prior, ACS CAN is really looking at tanning regulations and how we can move that forward statewide. This year, we're partnering with the Iowa Medical Society and the Iowa Dermatology Society to look at introducing a bill that would restrict the use of tanning beds to anyone under the age of 18. We think it's important. The rise of melanoma in our youth is increasing, and we're seeing as their young cells are still adapting that there's a 59% increased risk of melanoma for those individuals tanning before 35.
As a research oncologist, Dr. Wiener, how does that happen? If I'm a 20-something and I go to a tanning facility and get that, can that affect me? When would that affect me? In 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? Do we know how it works?
Well, we understand to a degree how it works. And in fact, the tanning response is actually a response to injury from the radiation that you're exposed to from the rays of light. And the melanocytes, the cells that cause the tanning, start growing in response to that damage. It makes you tan, but it also can create those genetic abnormalities in those cells that 1 year, 5 years, 10 years later could lead to a skin cancer. Most worrisome being the melanoma skin cancer, the most deadly form of skin cancer. So it's actually damage from the light on those cells that then take a long time to grow out to become the cancer.
What about a claim that tanning beds are less dangerous, less hazardous than natural sunlight? Is there any tanning that in these facilities that is safe?
The bottom line is no. That obviously the more you tan, the more dangerous it is. But there's no safe level of tanning, just like there's no safe number of cigarettes you can smoke.
Mm-hmm. Jen, anything to add to that?
No, just that this
because I think there's a real problem of awareness here that some people may think coming in out of the natural sunlight and getting an artificial tan may be less hazardous or not hazardous at all. And that's not true, you're saying, Dr. Wiener.
That's not true. I mean, sun safety is also very important. But the fact is that people intentionally damaging their skin in a tanning booth, very often the whole body, not just exposed areas, has clearly been shown to be associated with an increased risk of melanoma skin cancer.
1-866-780-9100, talking about the battle against cancer, how we're doing, and the research that's going into it and the funding that's paying for that research. Let's talk to Gail is in Des Moines. She dialed 1-866-780-9100. Hi, Gail.
Hi.
Tell us your story.
Well, I was diagnosed with lung cancer in the spring of 2010, which was quite a surprise because I've never smoked. And my entire left lung was removed. I went through some pretty harsh chemo. And I'm just calling in because I'm grateful so much for cancer research because I've had a recurrence, and so far everything's manageable, but I know now there are targeted chemos out there that just attack the cancer and not all the good cells in my body, and if and when I need that, it's going to be there for me, and I'm just so grateful for that.
How was that process in getting to that clinical trial, taking part, finding the clinical trial and the process of actually going through it?
I have not been through a clinical trial yet.
Great. Mm-hmm.
I've been to the University of Iowa and visited with a doctor there, and he's got me all set up in case I ever need it, but so far I don't need it.
Okay, Gail, thank you for your call, and we wish you good luck.
Thank you.
Gail calling from Des Moines. This is a tweet from Evan. He asks, are you developing better ways for doctors to detect cancer before it becomes terminal in people that range from infant to mid-20s? Dr. Wiener.
Yes, we are always looking for better approaches to identify cancers early. One of the challenges that presents itself there is what we call false positives, where we have a test that might be very good at detecting a cancer, but every once in a while, the test will show a positive even though there's no cancer there. And obviously, that can be devastating for someone when you have a test that suggests they have cancer and it's not there. So as we develop these screening tests and we're looking to develop them and we're making progress, we want to be sure they're as accurate as they possibly can be. Ongoing studies right now are looking at better ways of testing for bowel cancer by testing for actually the DNA from the cancer itself in the stool. In heavy smokers, there's evidence that spiral CT scans can help detect cancers early when they're still curable. There's a lot of work going on in this area for various cancers. Again, there's never going to be one test for every cancer. We wish there was.
We know there have been tremendous advances in mapping our genes, identifying what diseases individuals are predisposed to having. What about cancer? Detecting cancer or knowing the probability of having a certain type of cancer in an individual before it happens?
Sure. So when we talk about genes and cancer, we really talk about it in two different dimensions. The first is the genes that you inherit from your parents. And those genes are in every cell in your body. And some of those can predispose you to developing a certain type of cancer. So the genes known as BRCA1 and 2, for example, can predispose to developing breast cancer. And women who have those genes can talk to their doctor about whether any special precautions should be taken. When a cancer develops, it very often develops because a gene in a single cell went haywire and made that cell grow out of control. So what we're doing now is we're comparing the normal cells from a patient to the cancer cells from the patient to see which gene went haywire to make that cell turn cancerous. And that's the one we want to attack.
Mm-hmm. Where do you see this type of research going in the future? What will we know as individuals about our cancer future, our possible cancer future in the future?
Well, when people ask me, is cancer a genetic disease or is cancer an environmental disease? My answer is yes. It's a combination. So our genes can change our risk of developing cancers. And some families are more prone, some are less, based on their genetic makeup. But it's not absolute. It's the interaction between those genes and the environment. So looking at your individual genetics might tell you about the risk of getting certain cancers, but is not going to tell you absolutely yes or no or at what age you might get the cancer.
You mentioned earlier in the hour, Dr. Wiener, the connection between cancer and our immune systems and how that's being used and advanced. Go into that a little bit more about what we've found out.
Well, it's an incredibly exciting area, as I mentioned. One of the things we've learned is that our immune system has a natural off switch. If you develop a strep throat, your lymphocytes will grow and help fight off the infection. And then when their job is done, they've got a signal that tells them to turn off and die. Well, we've figured out what those signals are and can now actually block them. So we can take immune system cells that start to fight the cancer, and then normally the cancer might turn them off. We can keep them going. And this is a new class of anti-cancer drugs that is proving very promising in the treatment of a number of different cancers. It allows the immune system to get revved up and specifically attack the cancer.
Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. We have a few callers waiting. Let's go to Charles City. Melissa is joining us. Hi, Melissa. Welcome to our program. What's your question?
Hello. Thank you. I was wondering if there's a direct correlation from the steroids, antibiotics, hormones that the farmers and everybody's injecting into our beef, our cattle, our poultry, and also if some of the ingredients in our food is making a difference with the increase in cancer, such as the other day I was reading an article about an ingredient in candy is an ingredient that they use to de-ice airplanes. To me, there's got to be some kind of correlation to this.
Okay, Melissa, good question. What about our diet and possible harmful additives that may be in some of our food, Dr. Wiener?
Well, there's a lot of research looking into that. And as you might guess, it's very difficult to dissect it out because very often we're trying to understand what happened to somebody and what they consumed 5, 10, 15 years before. I would say that actually, if you look at age-adjusted cancer rates, they're actually dropping slowly. So the fact that our environment is more dangerous now than it was years ago, I think is not if you take tobacco and obesity out, is not proven by the facts. But the fact is that if you compare tobacco and obesity and exercise, or the lack thereof, far and away those dwarf any other possible environmental causes of cancer. Mm-hmm. So while it's very important for us to continue to look for these other causes and things in the environment and things in the food, relatively speaking, from a public health point of view, from reducing the burden of cancer, exercising, staying at the right weight, and avoiding tobacco products by far are the most important factors.
And tanning we mentioned there as well as a possible one there too. Would you wish for some action from the legislature in regards to tanning, Dr. Wiener?
Yes. I believe that tanning, as Jen mentioned, for people under the age of 18 should not be allowed in Iowa.
Okay. Join our conversation. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. Derek tweets us, how successful is chemotherapy in saving life? Cancer-free 5, 10, 15 years down the line. I don't know if he's speaking about himself, but chemotherapy, how has that advanced?
So chemotherapy has been fantastic for a small number of cancers. I already mentioned testicular cancer. If you look 30 years ago, testicular cancer was essentially 100% fatal. Now we can cure 90% or more patients, depending upon the specific subtype. For large cell lymphoma, chemotherapy has been very successful. It also can decrease the chances of cancers coming back after surgery in some cases. For other types of cancer, chemotherapy really has been much less effective than we would like. So as I said, every cancer is different. It's very complicated. There's really no simple answer to does chemotherapy work. It really varies cancer to cancer and patient to patient.
Jen Schulte, at the beginning of the program, I mentioned some statistics. Roughly 1.6 million Americans will be diagnosed with cancer this year. What about zeroing in on Iowa? What can you tell us about Iowa cancer statistics?
Yeah, so right now, there are our big focus is tobacco. Lung cancer is the number one preventable cause of death. So oftentimes a lot of our policies are centered around lung cancer and tobacco prevention.
Mm-hmm.
For estimates, just new cases, we also see about 2,400 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year. Men, 2,200 will be diagnosed with prostate. So those are kind of the two big cancers for men and women in Iowa. And as Dr. Wiener alluded to, another reason why we want to continue to invest in research and find new ways to prevent them or have early detection in both of those cancers.
Are there cancers that are more specific to our area, the Midwest, that you would find less or more often than other parts of the country or other parts of the world, Dr. Wiener?
There are. And so we are sometimes talked about living in the lymphoma belt, that this agricultural part of the Midwest, lymphoma cases are higher than they are elsewhere.
And lymphoma is a cancer of what?
Of the lymph nodes.
Of the lymph nodes. And why would that be?
Well, we're not sure, but this actually does relate to the caller earlier who spoke about environmental causes and chemicals. That many of the people that the increased risk is in farmers and in the rural areas, where for at least in decades gone by, the precautions against exposure to herbicides and pesticides and fertilizers was not well controlled. And people would get it in their fingernails and eat a sandwich, and who knows what they were exposed to years ago. We're hoping that this difference is going to decrease now that we're more careful with those types of farm chemicals. And we mentioned melanoma. Melanoma is higher in Iowa than in other states in the country. And we think some of that has to do with young people getting out in the sun and getting in those tanning booths when they can.
Right. And we've heard, though, discussions also that the sun provides us with very healthy things, vitamin D, through our skin. How do we know the balance between sun exposure and not exposing ourselves to sun?
Well, as with most things, everything in moderation.
Okay. John is in Iowa City. He's joining us to finish up our program. John, what's your question?
Well, I have a couple questions. One that you may be able to answer easily and one maybe not. I've read about some research about fasting as a way to the immune system and that there had been some benefits to that, maybe to cancer patients and whatever. And I wondered if you were aware of that or if you could comment on that and if there's any downside to the fasting. And the other question was just because I have a relative who is in stage 4 of prostate cancer and he's being treated with hormone therapy, and I was just trying to get kind of a rough idea of what the success rate with that was.
Okay. We don't have much time, so we'll see what we can get to there. Let's talk about, can you fast or diet in a way that starves a certain type of cancer, doesn't give it what it wants in terms of the diet?
Well, we do know that cancers seem to rely on glucose more than normal cells do. There's really no data that a short-term fast can actually be beneficial to the cancer. But we actually have a group of researchers who are really studying how modifying the diet might change sensitivity to radiation and chemotherapy. So it's an interesting idea that's currently being evaluated actually in clinical trials at the University of Iowa.
A quick comment on his question about hormone therapy.
So hormone therapy for prostate cancer can be very effective in shrinking the cancer and improving symptoms. Sometimes it's only a temporary improvement, but that improvement can last for months and years in many patients. So it is a very effective approach to treatment.
Okay. But before we go, you can tell us a little bit more about your new position, because at the outset, as we said, you just become president of the Association of American Cancer Institutes. And how many institutes do you coordinate there?
There are currently 92 member institutes from all over the country.
How is it decided what research is done where in the country?
Well, the research is based in large part on the expertise of the researchers and on grant funding. Funding also comes from private donors and grateful patients, as I mentioned. Basically, as a researcher, you want to research the area that you think is the most promising. Mm-hmm. And so there's no really strong top-down control. The idea is to find the good ideas and to move forward with them.
Lori is wondering very quickly before we have to say goodbye in a minute or so. Lori, our listener, is wondering about the medical marijuana and its curing effects, or what kind of a promise does it have?
I have to admit I don't know a lot about the actual rigorous studies that have been done with medical marijuana. Certainly people who have used marijuana in the past, many of them clearly have benefit with respect to symptom management when they undergo chemotherapy.
So at this point, symptom management in some cases possibly, but there's no evidence that it has any curative power.
Not that I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're just about ready to finish up. Anything we didn't get to, Dr. Wiener or Jen Schulte? Okay. Also, Lynette Ritchie, you were with us too. For a lot of people, cancer survivors, are you finding Lynette Ritchie? Did you tell people about your story, your cancer story, that it's not the taboo subject it used to be, isn't it?
That's correct. When I was diagnosed in 2003, I literally thought it was a death sentence, but now here I am in 2014 and still alive. So just thanks to the research and the drugs and the chemotherapy drugs that are keeping me going.
Lynette Ritchie, thank you very much. We wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Jen Schulte, Iowa Government Relations Director at the American Cancer Society, thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. George Wiener, Research Oncologist at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics and Director of the Holden Comprehensive Cancer Center, also a professor of internal medicine. Dr. Wiener, it's been a pleasure having you in our studio today to answer many of the listener questions and give us an update on treatment and funding. Thank you very much.
I appreciate the opportunity.
River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. In Des Moines, we had help from John Pemble. Tomorrow on the program, it's a NewsBuzz edition of our program. We hope to have a conversation with NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson. We hope you'll tune in for NewsBuzz tomorrow. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.